And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Hold That Podcast podcast. It's good to talk to you guys after a couple of weeks. I'm Chris Branch, your co-host here with Brody, my other co-host, Brody Miller. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Happy Mardi Gras. How are you doing?
Happy Mardi Gras. Well, we are celebrating a boil water advisory in our neighborhood in New Orleans. So
yeah,
same here. Couldn't get more cliche than that. Yeah. I'm having a coffee that I brewed hot and made cold. You know, classic stuff.
Yeah, I did a Vietnamese iced coffee because I had to boil it. That was similar. God, similar
you're so
thinking.
Bougie. You're so bougie.
Is that bougie? What about that's bougie?
I made the coffee and I put
it
in the fridge.
It's literally just condensed milk and coffee.
I know. It just, you know, I imagine really you making coffee. Some designs and the foam and like having a good time with it.
No, it's pretty simple. No.
Okay. All right. Well, we're both having
coffee. Maybe that's what I'll get you for your birthday this year. I'll get you a fin.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. It's good to talk to you guys. Love this coffee podcast that we're on. We have a lot to catch up on, Brody. And I wanted to start doing, as we talk about being more organized on this podcast, I want to start having a rundown. So here's what we have on the depth chart for today. We have Brody's lovely baseball story that you guys all should have read. And if not, we're going to talk about it. LSU has spring practice dates. Big deal. We're going to do a little depth chart analysis. You know, we have so long to look at this, and we're going to go position by position over this entire offseason. But I want to prime you guys before we get into spring practice so we don't overanalyze one part or not pay attention somewhere else. We want to do some storylines going into spring practice. I mean, you know, what to expect, and maybe talk a little college football playoff expansion and how it could affect LSU. You ready, Brody?
I am ready.
Okay. Baseball story. You wrote a lovely one this weekend about the return of full-fledged baseball to LSU, a new era. And I know this is a football podcast, but I think every LSU baseball fan is also an LSU football fan. And for those of us listening, I assume we're all pretty regional here in our fandoms, and we all know LSU baseball is a very special thing. Just tell me what your weekend was like. What were the vibes?
Yeah, no, it was I had one, you know, fellow beat writer in the press box say something that I don't agree with, but it's somebody who like knows baseball, LSU baseball, so much deeper than I do that I'm curious what you guys actually all think. But he said, he's like, I think this is the most anticipated opening day. He went even further. He said it's the most anticipated game in the box ever, like the new box. And I'm
I don't know about
me
that.
Me and two other guys were like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, there's been like massive super regionals.
In that box.
What are we talking? But I think to his point, and again, I'm not going to focus on that point, but like to this concept was, yeah, I mean, it's the first opening day really in 2 years. Last year, you know, obviously there was kind of like, it was back, but it wasn't back. 2020 obviously was one kind of a dud year, and obviously got cut short. And just so like people really haven't like had a full throttle box in 2 years, and LSU baseball hasn't been where it should be for really 5 years. And now you got a new coach, Jay Johnson, and excitement. You got a really loaded lineup that could be, you know, a really scary team. And I get what he's saying, because it did have a bit of a feel of just kind of like, I mean, and it's tough to like say this without sounding like you're ripping on Paul Menary, because I'm the biggest Paul Menary defender on earth. I think there's a little element of like LSU fans expected too much, and Paul Menary is one of the greater coaches in college baseball history. But sometimes there's just time for a change. There's time for a new energy, time for some youth. And I really felt that this weekend. And kind of the whole reason I went down, right, was just, you know, because again, you guys know this, I don't really cover baseball the way I did 18 and 19, where I'm there every single day. You know, I'm going to go and write some occasional features and whatnot. But I wanted to kind of write about just how SEC baseball is just like this religion that like isn't normal everywhere else. And like when you explain it to people up north, they're even like confused. Like what do you mean? Like, oh, you're covering LSU base? Like, why? You know, like it's just it's different. And even if like it's a good team, it's still sport number 4 or 5 there, right? Or even some ACC schools are like that. You know, and it's just different. Right. While the SEC, I mean, I think at LSU it's number 2. Is that wrong? Yes,
you're absolutely right. I mean, and no slight to basketball, but and I love when basketball is good, but we have probably the most fair weather basketball fan base of any fan base.
Both LSU and Pelicans, yeah.
But I mean, LSU, but LSU basketball, I mean, some of my favorite memories are from the PAC, PMAC, but when the team is not great, there's nobody there, and it's different with LSU baseball. I mean, I would put baseball at number 2 and like even gymnastics number 3, and then we can figure out the rest. But
yeah, and I think it's true, and I think it's true for a lot of SEC schools. You know, I don't think it's going to be 2 everywhere. First off, Vanderbilt, it's 1, right? I think that's accurate. Right. And I think even if it's not 2, it's like 3 or maybe 4. But it's just different, and there's a passion to it, and a lot of that could be our people way better than me, this northerner, could explain. But and, you know, it has, I think part of it has to do with, you know, there's no Major League Baseball teams nearby, but they do love baseball in the Southeast. You know, I think that's a big part of it. I think there's just also this element of, and this part I actually will defer to you, but it's just like, I don't know. There's this, I don't even know. It's something like you can cling on to and make yours. I think that's a small part of it, that it's like, hipster's not the right word, but there's that like small aspect of hipsterness, you know, where it's like, this is our thing. Is that crazy?
No, it's not, because, you know, growing up here, the closest baseball teams are 5 and 8 hours away. So even if you're a big fan of the team, you might be going to 1 game a year at 2 max. Yeah. So it's not like you have this intimate relationship with it, with a Major League Baseball team, like people from the Northeast do, where there's a team within an hour and a half, 4 or 5 teams within 3 hours. It just, it doesn't happen like that, where you can say on a Tuesday, why don't we go catch the game? But LSU baseball is a really damn good. And like probably, you know, as you said in your story, arguably the biggest college baseball brand there is, maybe outside of a couple of SEC competitors. And it just depends on who's best at the time.
Yeah.
Has this very different fan base within the LSU fan base that are very passionate. They show up no matter how good the team is, they're going to be there. And they're going to be, I love the anecdote about them keeping the score in their scorebook, no matter if it's cold or hot or whatever. It's just like, but it's so true.
So like, many people do it. Yeah.
you'll see 4 people per section doing it. And, you know, I will say, as a former baseball beat writer and an avid baseball fan, I don't want to do that. That's God, not no. How I enjoy, you know, watching a baseball game.
There was one season where I kind of did it, and I'm like, I hate this.
I did it when I covered the Phillies for a bit, and I was like, man, I can't even get like the atmosphere of the game, which is what I thrive on as well, because I'm like, was that a fly out to right or left? Like, did I look away? You know, but it is a very intimate relationship with the game, the people that do that, and I have a lot of respect for them, and it's just it is a lovely dissection of the LSU fan base as baseball fans. So everybody should go read Brody's story. We're gonna put it in the show notes. It was just it made me want to go back like soon to a baseball game. So I'm gonna try to make a game or two this season. So great stuff, Brody. But for what it's worth,
just to talk the baseball part, LSU's gonna have a loaded offense. That's all. That's the biggest insight I can give to our listeners. Holy crap, that offense is a chance to be.
I told myself, I was like, look, don't get too excited about them just yet, because it was Maine.
But it's also like 5 or 6 established bats. Like, they're not like,
oh my gosh,
they just broke out against Maine. Like, it's like guys who are dudes, you know, guys who Jacob Berry was an All-American at Arizona, you know, like I think they have a chance to be. I mean, there's really, what, 2 weak spots? And, like, I think there's been a lot of years in the Palmieri era where it's more like 4, you know? And I think that's
right. I can't wait for them to win games like 19 to 11.
Right. It's gonna be so real. I can't wait. Thank God we're not covering it day to day anymore, because, man, I don't miss that. 4.5-hour games.
Just wait until they lose their first midweek game and everybody wants to fire Jay Johnson. Just joking.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, they play Tech this week.
Well, maybe so it might maybe happen. it's in about 24 hours.
All right, moving on from baseball.
Let's move on to the established king of LSU sports, football. Spring practice dates were announced. Spring practice begins March 24th. The spring game is April 23rd. You know, we haven't talked in a couple weeks, Brody. What is the atmosphere around the program right now? Things are settling into place a little more. What are you hearing? What are you feeling?
Yeah, I think there's been a little bit of like everything these last 3 months for like the staff and whatnot has just been kind of like a chaotic mad dash. You know, it's just constantly trying to get things in line. Obviously, the portal stuff has been chaotic, the recruiting, you know, and then just getting on the same page and whatnot, winter workouts, all that stuff, trying to get on the same page with the playbook, figuring that out, you know, trying to connect with players and stuff like that. I think it's been a bit of a, yeah, just a mad dash. And I think spring football will be welcome for a lot of people just because it will like finally add a little bit more just basic structure and a little bit of more knowledge of what, where things stand. And I think there are some guys that have really, I think what's been interesting talking to people in the program have been just kind of like asking, you know, who they've been leaning on, you know, who the guys like, you know, I think they're finding their guys that they can go to and be their liaisons, you know, that's just gonna be so important for a first year. And I think, you know, I think you're, Mason Smith's a big one, you know. I think Jack Besh is a big one. Jack Mashburn, guys like that. You know, I think they are finding those leaders they can really count on to be their bridges. Mike Jones, you know. So I think it's kind of an interesting time in that sense. And I think it's kind of chaos over there. I do think that. But I think spring will give us a lot more answers.
Yeah, definitely. And as you told me right before we started recording, we are having a press conference, you said, tomorrow with Brian Kelly.
Wednesday and Thursday both, yes. Yeah, Brian Kelly will introduce basically his staff. And it'll be great for you guys as readers because it'll mean we'll get some real insights on, I'll be honest, it's in person too. And there's like breakout sessions, which means we can have real, not like forced press conference conversations, but like right. Really talk to them about, you know, what they want out of their scheme, what they think of guys and all that stuff. So it'll be really helpful to actually get a sense of what this future of LSU is going to be because it's haven't really had any answers these last 3 months.
I will say from my slightly outsider media fan perspective here, I'm glad for it because there was a swelling discourse among the LSU media and fan base that Brian Kelly had not addressed the media yet in a press conference at all, which I kind of get, but as a fan, I wasn't too upset about. I didn't really find a lot of worry there. I just assumed he was very busy and like we're all getting to know each other here, so at least that will shout down that narrative for a little bit. And like you said, we're gonna get upfront direct communication for one of the few times. I mean, the only times that I can remember Brian Kelly talking to us since he got hired were just a couple of cringeworthy moments with accents and dances and, you know, at a basketball game and in the booth at the bowl game. So it's going to be nice and talking to coordinators and getting it feels more real.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to put it. It's starting to feel like, everything's felt very like so far in the distance, you know, and I think that's kind of by design to some extent, but I am looking forward to actually getting to cover this team and, you know, shoot, we can start talking about like roster stuff and like team debates and no longer just these like broad thoughts on like Kelly's fit Louisiana, you know, which is why, you know, it's good to do that depth chart piece last week, which we are about to discuss, just kind of being like, oh, it's actually looking like what this roster looks like because we haven't done that much.
Let's talk about the roster. I posed to you in our show rundown. Tell me the three biggest depth chart battles that you are interested in as an objective observer.
Yeah, I think there's a part of me that always gets the most into the battles that aren't like obvious, but they're like positions where there's a lot of options, but I don't know who's the guy, you know, and obviously that's common sense to some extent, but it's not just like a need. It's just like, what's the pecking order here? I have no idea. So I think linebacker is going to intrigue me big time there because I actually think they've actually done a good job with linebacker. Looked like a huge red flag about 2 months ago, and getting Baskerville back, signing Perkins, bringing in West Weeks and Colby Fields, which I don't know if those guys are going to be like starters, but you just suddenly feel really good about the depth. Where suddenly a guy like DeMario Tolan, for example, who's a really good young linebacker, I think he's going to be I've heard really good things about him in winter workouts. He's an early enrollee. Like, I think he's going to be a dude. Suddenly he's far down the depth chart and he can just develop, you know, I would assume at least. Or Greg right. Penn, a guy with just this massive upside who, you know, Damone Clark raved about. I don't know if he's going to start. You know, I don't think Harold – in my depth chart, I put Baskerville and Jones as my current starters, which means Harold Perkins, this five-star, and everyone's, like, eager for a top-10 guy to start. But he could maybe rotate in and kind of ease into a role. I think that's really healthy, actually. So I think I'm most interested by that because I literally don't know. Like, Baskerville's, like, this definition of stability and, you know, he's a smart guy, knows what he's doing, always in the right place, but maybe doesn't have the physical tools. Mike Jones is a guy who – I've heard really good things from the Kelly regime the last few weeks about the, you know, he's looking really good in workouts. He obviously made a really good leap to end the year too. Once that right. defense kind of changed under Durante Jones. So I'm just fascinated by positions like that where it's like, yeah, there's five guys I think you could hypothetically start and be good, but I have literally no idea what the combination is. So I think that's a big one. I think the other that I'm really intrigued by, and it kind of fits the same thing in a way, is safety, because they brought in Joe Fuscia. I believe I actually don't know if it's a little more Louisiana accent pronunciation than that. But
oh, you're fine.
I wonder if it was like, I don't know, it doesn't matter. But like, you basically have three starting SEC safeties there between Jay Ward, Joe Fuscia, Major Burns. They all, and by the way, as much as like the defense was a problem at times, I thought Major Burns was a perfectly reliable starting SEC safety.
He was.
I think he did a good job. Jay Ward was banged up, but he's a good player. I just wonder what happens there, you know, because I don't think you got Joe Fuscia from Arkansas to be a bench warmer. So does he knock Burns down? You go Ward and Fuscia, and then, you know, yeah, obviously you play three safety a good amount these days. So maybe, you know, he still rotates in. Or do you move guys around a little? Jay Ward came up as a corner and then moved to safety out of desperation and thrive there. And I think, I kind of do think that's a better fit for him. But corner's shaky, so maybe you move Ward to corner. And I even tried to ask some people on the staff, and they're like, the honest answer is we don't know yet. We're going to find that out. So I think that's what I'm really interested by, just to see what their plan is there. Because, and obviously, I guess, well, I'll just segue that to say corner's the other one that's wide open, right? Because, you know, you did bring in three transfers, and Bernard Converse, an all Big 12 guy, Mekhi Garner right. from UL, and Greg Brooks from Arkansas to play nickel. I don't think it's unreasonable to assume all three of those might start. And I also think they're probably going to bring another corner. It does kind of seem like that. So maybe Garner doesn't start. I don't know. But it's just, I just find myself being like, I don't, and this is just years of watching this, I never want to bet on every transfer being exactly what you think they'll be. You know what I'm saying? Like, just numbers game, that isn't how it works. It's a transition to a new school. It's changing conferences and levels. Like, I don't think it's safe to assume all three of those guys are really SEC starters. So it's like maybe Ward becomes one of the corners, or also like what happens with Sage Ryan, who's a really promising nickel. Brooks is, I assume, the starting nickel now. What does Ryan do? Does he go back to safety even? I have no idea. Does he try outside corner? So I think those are kind of my main areas, because I just, and maybe that's a long way of saying corner and safety together I'm intrigued by, because the interweaving that could happen there. So I think those are some of mine. How about you?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's so funny because you answered that perfectly, because as you know, our listeners know, you are the objective observer and I am not the objective observer. So I left out
the really obvious one, but like,
you laid out very interesting position battles. I am interested in seeing that, but my fandom says, where are we bad? And where should I worry
totally,
about?
Oh, totally, yeah.
And so all of the defense, like, you know, I was reading
through your depth chart. To be fair, corner is the number one bad area other than the other one we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what all Big 12 cornerback means. I mean, I can't say I've grinded a lot of Jerick Bernard Converse tape, but he seems like he'll be reliable.
Yeah, I trust him 100%.
I don't know about any of these other guys. That is a position of worry for me. Everywhere else on the defense, I feel pretty good about. I mean, just like you said, a linebacker, like Micah Baskerville is reliable. Mike Jones came on at the end of the year. Yeah. Would love to see Harold Perkins pop, you know, and maybe he starts, maybe he's awesome. That would be great. But I don't know if we need that right now. I mean, all these guys are pretty good. You know, the offense is what worries me.
Yeah.
I guess my first thought went to the offensive line.
As it should. Yeah. I left that for you. That's a team player.
But at the same time, like, they brought in so many people. And it's just so many new names, new faces there, that there's so many people on the roster that could be good, but also, like, I have no idea. I mean, what is your sense there? I mean, I know Tre'Mon Shorts was a big get. Dellinger's coming back. You know, Cameron Wire you have as a backup, which is interesting, because I thought he was okay last year, but he's a senior. He's been around a while. Cardell Thomas, I forget, exists sometimes. He was one of the biggest recruits in that class and then just hasn't seen the field. I mean, yeah, talk to me about the offensive line first.
Yeah, and I also try to, like, have a little fun with that projection because it's a weird one. Obviously, it's the biggest question mark on this roster, and anything else is a lot. Like, it just is. And, yeah, I really like both transfers they added. And, by the way, of course they're going to try to get more. They still have a few spots open, I think. They have the kid from Vanderbilt Cummins that visit. You know, they're going to have more. But Miles Frazier's a guy who, yes, you have. Let me start over. Basically saying they brought in two guys that are really highly touted, Miles Frazier and Tre'Mon Shorts, but both are also going up a massive jump in level. Like, Miles Frazier was a freshman All-American, one of the highest graded tackles in the country. You have every reason to believe he should be a two or three-year starter here. But still, like, there is just the element of, like, going from FIU to LSU, like, Conference USA to SEC. Like, I don't expect him to be the same player at LSU that he was there. So, huge upside there, but I wonder. And Shorts, same thing, kind of. You know, he's going from FCS to here. So, you just wonder. And then after that, and by the way, Shorts, I'm all over the place. Let me say this. You still have no idea who's going to play center. Like, none. There's actually arguably not a single actual center on the roster. You know, Turner practiced there for a while, but he's kind of fluid and he's hurt all the time. You know, Joseph Evans is a guy who I wouldn't rule out going back to O-line. He's back on the roster now. Had that one stretch 2020 where it looked like he was going to be the backup center and be the center of the future, and then got moved back to D-line, but they really liked his upside at center. So I'm not going to rule that out at all. Really good kid. I don't have fun with this. My gut kind of says, like, it's almost going to be Liam Shanahan all over again, where, like, Shorts is going to slot into being a center, and he's a veteran, high IQ guy. You can probably adjust to that quickly. It does kind of, like Shanahan, alleviate the, like, change in level thing, you know? Like, hey, right. You know, it's like, if you're a FCS tackle, maybe you're an SEC guard to center, et cetera. That's just my gut feeling pick that I have no real information to go on. But after those two that I feel like are probably going to start, is there a single other lineman you know for sure are SEC starter quality? No, there aren't. Like, there are guys who might take a leap, but there is not a single guy you are sure of. And that is, and by the way, the other two I said I'm sure of are transfers, so not even really sure of those. I think that's the scary thing. I do like what they've added. I'm not, like, you know, it's possible to both say I really like what they did and I have no confidence. Like, and I think Marlon Martinez he impressed me. I don't know about you, but, like, he's not great. I think he's like the Micah Baskerville of O-line, probably, right?
Yeah. All those guys, like, for the troubles that the offensive line had last year, you know, the guys that are coming back, like Marlon Martinez and Cameron Wire, Anthony Bradford and Garrett Dellinger, I'm just like, you know, they're like, I wouldn't be surprised if they play okay.
Yeah.
I'm not like big number whoever, left tackle, let's go run behind him. Let's run left 17 times a game. That's not how I'm going to feel about any of these guys right now. But I mean, we're gonna figure it out. That's the good thing that we have actual fodder to go on soon about the team next year, which is very exciting for me, because you know, it was what a weird season was last year, and flushing that away and all the change, and like finally we're gonna have actual data to go on. No, can't wait.
That's a really good way to put that. Actual data to go on. It's so true. And yeah, it's like there's also guys that, and to give credit where it's due, there's guys that I could see him taking a big leap, right? Anthony Bradford's the trickiest one, and he's in that, you know, I think we have like four players every year that we put in the zone of like, we've been talking about their upside for 3 years. Now you have to put them in the I'm not giving you the benefit of the doubt unless proven right. otherwise category. Right. John Emery was like the MVP of this for 3 years. And still I guess is. He still is, yeah. But like, yeah, Bradford, the Ogeron staff loved his, you know, they thought he was such a great athlete, loved his thing, but he always had, you know, weight issues or injury issues, or maybe they coincide. You know, I'm just not confident there. And Garrett Dellinger, I mean, he was like ready to at least play some true freshman.
Right.
Really good talent. And they asked him to do some things that they probably, I think like his future is probably as a right tackle, right? And I think he could really, if he commits to that, could be a really great right tackle. So he could take a huge leap in year two, because he was an early enrollee. You know, he's been developing for a full year now. I totally think he could take a leap. But still, like, it's like one of the biggest things I yell on this podcast all the time is like, we too often assume people develop like a video game, where it's like, yo, that rookie's a 76, but you know, year two, he becomes an 82.
He's going to gain XP every game. He's going to get that up to an 84 by the end of the year. Yeah.
These last 3 years have really taught me you just can't do that anymore. So it's like, I'm going off exactly what he was last year. He was pretty okay. And I expect him to get better, but I still want to bank on it. So yeah, I think Garrett Dellinger's a guy who I think I should slide into that right tackle spot, but it's tricky then, because there's Cam Wire, who, yeah, I mean, he's a veteran, been at least like a co-starter in some capacity for 2-3 years, but he has constant knee issues that I don't think are just going to like go away. And, you know, I also don't think he like necessarily excelled. So part of me is like, I kind of could see the scenario where Frazier and Dellinger are the tackles and Wire's the swing guy. I think that makes a lot of sense. And they added these freshmen. Like, there's a small part of me that actually, I don't, for you true OGs, if you might have logged on the story earlier, you might have noticed 6 a.m. that morning, I left out Anthony Bradford. I just literally forgot Anthony Bradford, which shit happens, okay? It was like, LSU doesn't have a 22 roster up yet, so I'm like literally just going off 21 and like piecing together who's still here. So give me the benefit of the doubt. But you know, the real hipster opinion would be knowing I actually had Emory Jones as my starting right guard. Because I forgot Bradford. But, like, I kind of just have this weird gut feeling he's a guy who could come in and really, like, be ready. You know, he's just a really exciting athlete for an O-lineman. I think he's pretty mature. I just wonder. You know, I'm talking out my ass, but I wonder. So, I like the idea of him maybe really being in a competition with Martinez, Bradford, etc. for one of those spots. And, obviously, there's Will Campbell, the five-star tackle who, yeah, I'm never going to be confident any freshman O-lineman's ready to start. So, I'm not going to put him there yet, but he's good enough to play somewhere. So he could play guard, actually. He'd be a great guard. So anyway, I went on really long about the O-line there, but it's just basically the zone of like, I like what they added. I just have zero assurances anywhere.
Well, the cool thing is, you know, it's slightly cliche, but this is a whole new coaching staff. And even guys who have been here, everybody has a fresh start here. So everybody can make impressions. There's going to be a lot of guys with the shots, and I assume the best five guys will win. But there's not like, you know, oh God, we recruited this guy and we need to like, there's a sunk cost fallacy with some prospects that some coaching staffs are like, he's not producing, but like, this is my guy. And you know, he's going to get that XP to get up to the level. I know. There's none of that here. Two other, worries that I want to touch on. By the way,
also, like you said, Kelly has a better track record with O-line and Brad Davis. I don't want to undervalue him having a full offseason.
Right.
Because I think the O-line genuinely did get better as the year went on, and he only joined the team in the summer. He actually changed up some of the techniques they were using and stuff like that, and they kind of it took him a little bit. So I'm not ruling out they get a lot better with Brad Davis in year two. Continue.
Tight end. I like that. Let me say, I like that in your depth chart, you did not put Jack Besh here. I don't think he belongs there. I know he's technically a tight end.
Yeah.
The boy's a wide receiver.
He's a wide receiver that they use there out of necessity, which they might have to again. Yeah.
He is a A-plus or A-minus slot receiver, and like we're just going to call him that. I'm okay with that, but that leaves tight end looking a little thin. I know that Jack Mashburn came in and played really well last year, but Jack Mashburn was not exactly a threat in the passing game, if we can say that politely.
I literally can't remember him catching a pass, actually.
I mean, there was the thing that I will take away from Jack Mashburn last year is that putting him in against Florida allowed Tyrion Davis-Price to run for the school rushing record in an upset win. And like that was the big thing that they did.
Oh, yeah. Him opened up the run game the whole second half of the year to some extent, right? Yeah.
Should I be worried about that? Is that me being over worried? Or is like, should I be like, yes, get the dude who can mash dudes in there? Put Besh out in the flat and stop worrying about it. Like, because first off, LSU couldn't run the damn ball for the first half of the year. And I know it's not all Jack Mashburn, but, they changed up schemes. They ran a lot of counter and it worked out pretty well, considering the lack of success early in the year. But like, I don't know. I feel like it's like, is that a weakness or is that just fine?
No, I think the answer is it's both that's the actual biggest talent weakness on the roster, right?
Right.
But it's also a position that I just don't lose sleep over because you can just scheme around tight end. You know, like you don't need to play a tight end. You can also use, like we said, Jack Besh as a semi tight end. Like, so that's the only reason it's like simultaneously the biggest gaping hole and also like, you know, and I know that's like a very ignorant way of looking at it, but I kind of feel that way a little. So, one, I put Mashburn because part of me does think like the way Kelly and Denbrock like to run an offense, new staff. I keep going back to stability over upside for year one with a new staff, and I do kind of like I could see them being like, you know what, I like Jack Mashburn's run game he's going to add. You know, and you can't rule out Cole Taylor's got some real talent, so like I'm not going to rule out him also taking a leap. He does some great stuff, and also the big one, obviously, is they still might add a transfer. So far, as I've said repeatedly on here, they haven't really seen anyone in the portal they're crazy about, so they haven't really pursued anyone in the tight end. But, you know, whether that be red flags or talent. So I think it's a good – it's both, you know, where, like, they have really massive talent at receivers. So you can – and you got
right.
– let's say it's Miles Brennan at quarterback. You can kind of just say, hey, you know what, we're going to spread it out a little bit more this year and go one back and – you know, just try to get run games through opening up through the pass, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think that's where I stand.
Birdie, I need to issue a mea culpa to Jack Mashburn. 4 catches, 53 yards.
Including, I looked as well.
He caught the fake punt in Tuscaloosa against Alabama.
No shit.
God, yep.
Man.
I mean, he had 1 catch in 4 games. That was his longest grab. He had a nice grab for 18 yards in the Arkansas loss. And otherwise, it was a catch for 7 yards and a catch for 2 yards. But Jack, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
You caught my favorite Jack, play of the year. Like, that's all that matters.
I know. It's just like I'm horrified. I apologize to the Mashburn family.
For background, the deep love I had for that was rooted in the 2018 Auburn fake punt pass that, like, I literally used as a bit on social media for like 2 years of just like, it was like my number one thing of like, all right guys, my 3-part series on the fake punt pass is coming. Von Rosenberg, every time I talked to him, I'd get like a quote about how mad he is. He's never throwing a pass again. And then for the first time they try it with somebody else, they execute it perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Funniest thing in the world to me. Sorry.
It's beautiful. My only other area of worry, and it is somewhere that like, I feel like is almost now too much of an obsession for me and probably a lot of other LSU fans is running back. And if John Emery still exists, if he will play, have you heard anything new on the John Emery situation?
No. And yeah, like, you know, you talk to people close to Emery, they'll say, should be eligible. They're saying that pretty confidently. And I have heard some things that he's kind of bought in more, and he's really looking like he's in good shape and going to break out. And by the way, I actually think he was bought in and going to break out last year. You know, I did think that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do buy that. I'll say this. I probably shouldn't even say this, but, you know, I asked like a relevant staffer, you know, like last week when I was doing this, you know, what the status of Emery is. And he kind of just gave me a broad, what was it? He is still in the roster and he is still with the team, you know, or something like that. Still working out with the team. And like, that's all I could say. So I think you just have to kind of say, like, I would not put my money on just confidence that John Emery is going to be 100% the guy, yada, yada. It's just hard to do that. But as far as I can tell, and I will always tell you guys when I'm ignorant, I'm kind of ignorant on this. As far as I can tell, he should be available.
There's a lot of talent in that running back room. I have no idea who's playing, how any of them are going to look. I mean, Noah Kane, five-star talent, did not have the career he envisioned at Penn State. Would love that maybe a return home juvenates him. I don't know. We saw Corey Kiner, Armani Goodwin last year. Trey Bradford has been in our lives in some sort of way over the last 3 years, leaving, coming back.
So, I left Josh Williams out. Wow, I'm awful.
Josh Williams, I liked him too. He provided a little spark.
He's a scholarship running back, and I left him out because I feel terrible. Yeah, Williams is also a solid player. I said this last year to you, but I had a running back staffer last year telling me they're like, I actually think he's a better player than all the guys we're playing right now.
Fascinating.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, let's talk about him. Josh Williams, like, he provided some pop at some like, I feel like every time he was in the game, and then he would always do something, and then I was like, oh, Josh Williams, yeah. It's like, why isn't he playing more?
Yeah, I think he's just like a nice, well-rounded back that they kind of didn't have. You know, it's like you have a bruiser or you have an explosive guy. And it's like he's kind of just a certain well-rounded guy. And I feel like I look at this running back room a lot like I look at linebacker. And I think that for some reason I feel that way a lot with this team. I don't know what that's about. But running back just feels like every year it's the room where for like 5 years now, right? It feels like the room where, like, I feel it's stable. Like, I think there's probably four guys who are good enough to absolutely get major snaps. But and Clyde broke out in 19, but even all offseason, no one thought he was going to start. So I think 19 counts in this category where every offseason it's like a lot of options. I have zero confidence if anyone's going to become the guy. And that's where I'm kind of at. It's like Emery could be a superstar. He could be a Heisman candidate. He's so much talent. Just zero reason to bet on it. Noah Kane, big recruit, all this stuff, but always banged up. Like, I just don't know. I think there's a little bit of, like, his upside is just dropped. But I think he's going to be a reliable player. Corey Kiner and Goodwin both are just these really nice talents. Look really great. But I feel like I'm just learning running back. Like, there is always – I think there's a little more, like, football IQ catching up at running back than I think we would assume. So, I don't know. I actually just don't know. I put Emery because, like, if I'm doing a percentage – you know, cost benefit analysis, I feel the safest about putting him there because of his talent mixed with, you know, veteran, all that stuff. But like, man, you could tell me Corey Kiner ends up just being the guy and no part of me would be shocked.
Spin moves for everybody.
He does have a nice spin move.
He has a great spin about that.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You know, I will say Clyde Edwards-Helaire in 2019 made me feel like the dumbest smart fan ever because I was not super high on him coming in. I was just like, you know, he played behind Nick Brossette, like... I was like, he's just a good running back that's like not gonna wow me. And then he just went supernova the entire year and made me feel stupid. So hopefully one of these guys does the same thing. I would love that.
By the way, I have to always give credit to my guy, to Shea Dixon, for predicting Clyde to some extent. Everybody always viewed Clyde exactly like you and I did, right? Like, just like a, yeah, he's a nice 3-star, you know, he's quick, whatever. And Shea was always like, and Shea obviously covered him through high school and recruiting and all that. And he's like, Clyde tests off the charts and all like the testing stuff. Like, you know, the like athletics testing, Spark stuff. And he's like, yeah, he is way more upside than people realize. And he always said that. And I'm always like, I'll trust you because you know what you're talking about. And then he had right. like one of the better running back seasons in the last decade, honestly.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. So I just like to give Shea credit there.
Shout out to Shea. Those are the only other depth chart things. But are there any storylines that you're looking, that you are thinking about going into spring that I missed or that we haven't talked about?
I think we've hit a good chunk of them. I think there's just the element of just the scheme part, right? Like, it's not like there's not much we can even dive into because we just don't know. But just knowing, like, I don't really know what to expect. I don't know what – we'll find out more this week, actually. But, like, I don't know the breakdown between Kelly and Denbrock of, like, responsibilities calling the offense and right. what exactly it's going to look like. I don't know really exactly what Matt House wants to run because he's experienced both 3-4 and 4-3 in depth, so I don't know what he wants to run, you know? And, like, there's part of me that really wonders what the – you know, maybe four-man front is the best way to get the most out of LSU, but maybe I'm wrong, you know? So I think those are the things I'm really curious of.
And then everybody should be ready for another round, probably smaller, of transfers, maybe in and out after spring.
Good call.
Is that accurate?
Oh, definitely. I think now more than ever, there's always going to be one or two you just don't even expect and you don't even account for. And it's going to go the other way. They're going to bring a bunch of guys in. So,
Speaking of that, any word on Deion Smith? Yeah, he hasn't landed anywhere, has he?
No. What can I say? I will put it this way. As far as I know, Deion Smith is still at LSU and is still with the university, but I have been given – I don't expect him to be on the team come fall.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it. I think he's still going to be there through the spring, but I don't think he'll be there later.
Sounds good. Sounds right. I did want to include some college football playoff expansion talk, and it was kind of deaded this week until at least 2026. But our colleague Ari Wasserman brought up a good point about an 18 playoff, and I'm curious. First off, before I get to his point, what are your thoughts on an 18 playoff? Because this will affect LSU in some years, if not more often than not.
Well, I'm very firmly in the 12 team field camp. I don't. Okay. I love four. I see now the problems with four, and I think 12 is 100% the move. I think I don't love eight. But I'm open to arguments, so I want to hear yours. But I think my thing is I always go back to, I think the best thing about college football is the regular season. It's that every game matters. It's that, like, even when you're 8-3 and you're not making the playoff, every game matters, you know, like you want to beat your rival. And I always worry about more expansion means just a slow whittling away of that and a slow toward just being, you know, pro sports where it's like, yeah, you're going to lose 5 games. That's okay. I don't want that. And I think 12 is so brilliant because it actually is going to make the regular season better in so many ways, where it's actually going to make more teams involved and it's going to add a real – I think conference championships need to be important, and I think it's going to really add to that because, you know, like the double bye and all that stuff. So I really love 12 because I think it actually makes the regular season matter. Well, I think 8 – I have a fear it's going to go back to making the regular season a little weakened.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good point because a specific point that I want to talk about, and I think I'm also for 12. I kind of put it off when it seems like it's not going to happen anytime soon, but also, like, I don't believe that shit. Like, every college conference, the NCAA moved mountains during 2020 to reschedule games, to alter the entire composition of the college football game. And so you can't tell me that even though somebody says, oh, we can't do it, that something won't happen. Somebody won't come around at some point. So I'm not saying that it's going to be 14 until 2026 and that's final.
No.
Yeah. The interesting thing that Ari brought up that I thought has affected or would have affected multiple LSU teams is saying that, like, you know, adding the 18 playoff or the 12 team playoff, we think that, ooh, it'll get more G5 teams in there, like Cincinnati this year, or every other G5 team that has been undefeated or one loss that has been number 5, number 6, number 7 in the rankings. And honestly, the truth is, and I agree with Ari, is that you're just going to have a 2-loss national champion more often than not. Because some team like 2007 LSU, or like every single Ohio State team every year, to yep. Ari's point, you know, is going to be like, oh, I forgot that we have 5-star talent and we were stupid and lost a game early, and then a stupid game in the middle of the year. Oh, and now we're awesome again and we're going to beat everybody because nobody's expecting it to. And like, I, you know, you've only been around for a few years, and like, I know you've read about it, but like, LSU has had so many of those teams. Every Les Miles team was like that.
Oh, yeah.
Where they would go supernova on somebody in a BCS game that wasn't the national championship and looked like they could have beaten anybody in the field. And so I don't know how it's going to be under Brian Kelly, but it's just like, do you agree with me that it's going to, I feel like that would bring more like 2-loss big conference national champs, which would make everybody matter.
I think I'm never going to be against any format that actually tells me the best team. Like, if you're telling me, if your argument is, I'm not saying you, just anyone. If your argument is, man, it's going to lead to a lot of the time the best team actually has 2 or 3 losses and they go on a run. I'm like, so you're telling me they're proving they're the best team. Like, I just have a hard time being mad about that scenario. I do. You know, like, I think 2 of the more memorable title teams in the playoff era have been the teams we all disagreed on being there. Ohio State, when they went on their mm-hmm. run, like yep. that, people really weren't sold on that. They had a third mm-hmm. string quarterback, and that's one of the, I actually consider that one of the better teams in the playoff era. I love that team. And Alabama, when they took down Georgia, that was like the most debated. Like, that was the least convincing Alabama resume ever to make the playoff. I was actually 100% team Ohio State should be in that year over them. And guess what? Alabama won the title, beat one of the better Georgia teams in recent memory. And like, yeah, like, they earned it. They were clearly the best team. We had the 2 Assants. Like, and I think, yeah, so I just have a hard time being like, wait, you're telling me, like, your argument is that we should keep it small because we want to
I think it also cheapens the regular season a little bit.
That's valid. That's fair. Which is why I love 12, I think. Because okay. I don't know. Like, I think 8 still feels like a little bit of, if you're not in, nothing matters. Actually, it's going to make it more like, if you're not in, nothing matters, because now it's even like a little more open, if that makes sense. But yeah. if it's 12, it's like the number 20 team in the country that's, you know, not like not 10-1 Fresno. Like, I need to watch them. I need to know what's going on. Like,
yeah.
I just kind of feel like that actually makes it more, the games between the 8 and 3 teams still matter. While I think 8 teams does the opposite in a weird way. And I love the idea of 12 making, and 8 would do this too, I know, but 12 making conference championships so important and all that. I don't know. I just like that more. I think 12 is a brilliant, I loved the format because it actually, by going bigger, actually makes, in my opinion, the regular season better.
Commissioner Brody has spoken.
And also the worst argument for me is the most common one you see in the Twitter mentions is the, oh, 1 vs. 4 sucks every year, so what makes you think expansion's going to make it better? And I'm like, you are really missing the point. It means we're going to get 5-6 matchups that are incredible. We're going to get 3 – I don't know, my numbers are not accurate here. I don't know where I'm getting these. But like 3-7 matchups that are awesome, you know? Like, because usually it's 2 teams are special, and then like 3 through 8 are kind of similar. Like, yeah, it's going
to
be amazing.
And then you add that NCAA tournament like pressure to those 1 vs. 2 teams to be like, but can you actually make it through?
That's great.
In the NCAA tournament, it's like 6 games, but it's like, in here it would be like, can you make it through 3?
Oh, totally.
It would be 3, no, right? It would be,
I like think, 2. I'm so for it. I think 12 is awesome. I was getting giddy about it. I was so excited, and I'm a little bummed about what happened. And 8 would be really bad for Group of 5, in my opinion. I think 12 would be pretty good for it. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Well, I hope it works out. I mean, and like, by the next time playoff things change, whether that's in 2 years or 6 years or however long, who knows what the college football landscape is going to look like? Who's going to change conferences, whatever? But I think it's fun. And for a team like LSU that isn't at the Alabama and Georgia level right now of being, we should be in the playoff discussion every single year as one of the 4 or 5 best teams in the country. But when LSU has been humming, under Les Miles, under Ed Orgeron. It's like, well, we could either be number one or we could be like number eight, number nine, like number six. Like that's totally. That's valid every year. So like,
I think LSU would be one of the biggest winners of that. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, that is not in my case for why you should expand, but I'm just saying. Like,
it's in my case, Brody. It's in my case, Brody.
I would like LSU and A&M would be like in Auburn. Like those, like the second tier SEC schools would thrive on this.
Brody, do you know how much life I would bring from LSU beating A&M every year to eliminate them from a 12-team playoff and make them the number 17 team in the country at 8-4?
I know, right? I think that's the best way to put it. It's like
I would just
it would make the regular season a little more special. It would make those rivalries. It would make Michigan Penn State even better every year. I think that's another great comp because that's in that same tier, right? Like I think that would be awesome, and it would make us pay more attention to the, again, I use the Fresno example, but even like the Houston. Houston's a great example. Louisiana Lafayette most years. Like, wow, I said Lafayette. I try to usually say UL.
I'm proud of you.
I think it would make those teams you actually pay attention. It's not just like, yeah, they're not getting in. Who cares? Like, I think it's just better for everything.
I'm for it. We've spoken. I hope the NCAA is listening to this, the Power Brokers. I'm sure they have lasted this long on the podcast. So, I'm excited. I think we're affecting change, Brody.
I think so, yeah.
That is going to be it for us today. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We do have a possible exciting thing coming up in the future that I'll dangle here and let you know about next week.
Tease.
Brody.
You tease.
I know. I love it. We have to have the post-credit scene, like in Marvel, to like let people know what's coming in the HTP universe.
I couldn't agree more. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
See you guys.